Welcome, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's currently the 14th of April, 2012 here in Japan, and the 13th of April back in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by Anton Chaikin, the history editor for Executive Intelligence Review, and someone who's written hundreds of articles over the years on numerous different subjects. He's also the author of Treason in America, From Aaron Burr to Averill Harriman, and the co-author of George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography. Anton Chaikin, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, I wanted to pick up from something that that actually happened a couple of years ago now. Back in 2009, you confronted Ezekiel Emanuel, who was a presidential healthcare advisor and the brother of White House, former White House Chief of Staff, current Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, about eugenics, really, in an interesting way that ties modern health practices and bioethics into a line that goes back to Nazi eugenics and even further back, as I understand it. But let's get your take on this. First, a lot of people out there don't really understand what bioethics is or what it's seeking or purporting to do. So why don't we talk a little bit about the development of this academic discipline?
Well, first of all, let's clarify the supposed distinction between euthanasia and eugenics. They're both from the same philosophical viewpoint. They're both crimes, historically. And euthanasia is what is what you see when people thought not fit to live are killed by one means or another. Eugenics is supposed to be the selective breeding of people, denying some the right to have children. And in order to do that, you could either castrate them or kill them or use other means. But as is obvious, you're selecting some people to die and others to live based on some sort of essentially criminal or oppressive criteria. In bioethics today is a field based on really not confronting the background of genocide from the 20th and the 19th centuries. You have to understand what we're dealing with here. The practice of mass murder by the Nazis, which used euthanasia against their own population and a eugenical-based extermination against people who were wrongly born, i.e. Jews or people in some other country. These practices, of course, killed millions of people, but the Nazis' practices were based on a theory of eugenics developed by the British with help from American Southerners and Bostonians. And also, those mass murder practices of the Nazis are also based on the practice of the British Empire, which killed millions and millions of people in causing famines in various parts of the world, such as India and Ireland, by deliberate withdrawal of food and taking other means which caused mass death, not only from starvation, but through disease and so forth. So, and this was racially based, as well as based on strategic calculations. So this is a historically, eugenics is a British Empire crime against humanity. All of the eugenics practices that we saw and discussions and preparations for eugenics, which were going on in the United States in the early 1920s and earlier, going back to the late 19th century, those discussions were carried over, and the same discussions and preparations in England were carried over into Nazi Germany. After the war, after World War II, people who had participated in these movements wanted to keep the eugenics idea alive. And with the backing of particularly the Rockefeller Foundation, which had backed Nazi eugenics before World War II in Europe, they set up a population control movement that overlapped with the eugenics society and with eugenics ideas. And out of that combination of eugenics and population control was born the institutes and programs which are today at the heart of what's called bioethics, where you decide decide moral or ethical questions, not moral questions, ethical questions in a medical practice based on supposedly limited resources. So it's a completely phony and morally disgusting field in general. It's ill-born at the root of it, and it's a practice which has never confronted in the medical community and in the academic community that has this as part of its its practice. They've never confronted the basis for the existence of this bioethics.
And just to flesh out that historical pedigree even a bit more clearly, the Population Council did provide funds for Daniel Callahan to found the Hastings Center, which is considered the premier bioethics institute that boasts such people as Ezekiel Emanuel as fellows. And Daniel Callahan himself became a member of a director of the renamed Eugenics Society in 1987. And the founding director of the Hastings Center was Theodosius Dobzhansky, who was a chairman of the American Eugenics Society from 64 to 73. So, again, every single point at which there could be a connection to eugenics, there has been. So certainly there seems to be a direct historical pedigree of this so-called academic profession.
Yes, I think that the important thing to look at is the intention in the 1950s, when this transition was made from the old eugenics movement with Rockefeller Foundation and Rockefeller family participation in starting up both the post-war eugenics movement, which they changed the name of the Eugenics Society at that point to, I think it was the Society for Social Biology or something like that. But what was going on at that time with John Foster Dulles and his brother Alan Dulles, John D. Rockefeller Jr., Nelson Rockefeller, and others in that entourage, Avril Harriman. We're talking about the late 1940s, early 1950s. What was happening then is a terrible transition in the outlook of the United States away from the fundamental humanitarian ideas of the American Revolution, and particularly of Franklin Roosevelt, who in many ways replicated the administration of Abraham Lincoln. In particular, Franklin Roosevelt, as just like Lincoln, his attitude towards the underdeveloped countries. And that the idea during World War II is that we were going to end that war by aiding the African, Asian and South American countries that were impoverished largely from colonialism. We were going to help them develop into modern industrial powers. And John Kennedy, around 1951, when he became a congressman, he stated publicly that the British were misleading the United States on the pretext of worrying about communism to get us away from our historic mission of supporting nationalism and the strong national sovereignty and what would be industrialization in the underdeveloped countries. So if you have this attitude that was then adopted, and now we see it with a vengeance with the policies of Bush and Obama in succession, where you bomb countries if they threaten to get technology, nuclear science. You have wars going on in the underdeveloped sector of the world. You threaten countries that are developing. You know, North Korea dares to launch an intended satellite. We had failures of our satellites, so we're threatening to go to war with them. We cut off food aid for them. You had a change in this period, a deliberate change in the overall philosophy of humanity that was imposed on the United States beginning right after the death of Franklin Roosevelt. And it's in that period that this same Wall Street and London crowd that gave you eugenics and that actually supported Hitler from the very beginning, boosted him to power. After World War II, with Roosevelt safely dead, changed the philosophy of life of the United States of America. And this is shown not only in that foreign policy, but in the growth of a new kind of eugenics practice, which is based both on trying to limit medicine and you say that there are limited resources, so you have to kill somebody, and based on the idea of population restriction or zero growth or even negative growth, and that, of course, applies to third world countries, underdeveloped countries. So that's the context for the birth of this Hastings outfit and Callahan's work. The backers, the oligarchy, the big shots, the people who love the British aristocracy and the British Empire and that kind of heritage. This is their work and this is their outlook.
Well, then let's bring this up to the present day with that as background context, and let's talk about the way that the euthanasia debate has mainstreamed eugenics ideas in the medical profession.
Okay, you have in Europe and the United States, countries like Greece and Portugal, as well as here with the Obama Obamacare, you have a form of euthanasia that is going on now. I just heard on the radio today the pleading of people in Portugal. They've been ordered in Portugal to, by the European Commission, by the bankers, the dictatorships that the bankers have set up, that the British-led bankers, they aren't even a part of the European Union, but they run it, really. They've dictated to the people in Europe that they must cut back their medical care. They made a specific order, for example, in Portugal, that they have to cut back and raise the price of medical care to the people of Portugal. And so people are now starting to die from that order directly. They can't afford to go to a hospital or pay for medical care. And it applies, first of all, to the elderly and the poor. In the United States, you have this, and that's euthanasia. That's saying some lives are not worthy to be lived. Some lives are worthless. Old people are not producing, so get rid of them. In the United States, when Barack Obama introduced his health care reform in the Congress, he had already gone to the insurance companies in the United States and their Wall Street owners and said to them, "I intend to save $2 trillion by reforming medical care coverage in the United States and medical care. How are you going to do that? Well, you're going to do that by cutting back on care in certain categories." And the basic idea there is euthanasia. that some lives are less worthy to be lived. And this, the discussion that you have in the Hastings Institute with people like Ezekiel Emanuel and other participants, you know, with the government. Peter Orszag was marginally involved with Hastings himself. He's the budget director who put this stuff together for Obamacare. Their considerations are that you can calculate the worth of a human life at less and less as it gets more expensive or gets older, things like this. It's based on such a spectacular fallacy in economic science, such a spectacular lie and incompetence that it would make you laugh if human lives weren't at stake. Let me give you an example of this. When you take a cow giving birth to a calf, you'd add $500. You know that in a couple of years you can sell it for its meat or whatever, and it has a certain value per pound. Now take a human family, and the mother gives birth to a baby, and that baby at birth has no value. It has no worth economically, according to this kind of economics. Therefore, the calf is worth a certain number of hundreds of dollars, and the baby is worthless, or you could say that it's actually a net loss because you're going to have to spend money the baby does not produce, and it will not produce for years and years and years. So therefore, a calf is worth something, and human beings are worthless. This is the kind of thinking that reduces a human being to a lump of flesh or a beast, and is the kind of thinking that in a royal family or an aristocratic oligarchic outlook says that my little group is human and all other human beings are garbage. They're beasts. They're just flesh to be burned up and eaten. And therefore, that idea of oligarchy is the basis for this kind of Obamacare, which is based, as a matter of fact, on the demands of that Wall Street and London financial crowd that received trillions of dollars from Bush and Obama in bailouts while the crash continued and while the derivatives continue and so forth. They haven't solved anything. They've simply taken the money away from industry, away from science, away from the population, and it's just it's a program of chaos and mass murder. It's craziness. But that is euthanasia. That's what this present policy is based on, instead of the contrary idea that we had, say, during the space program, when we valued human life, we valued human genius, we valued the children to become geniuses, and so forth.
And just as one example that one could point to of that devaluation of life that's taken place in the bioethics debate, and it certainly seems to be getting crazier and crazier, one could point to that recent article that received some amount of attention in the British Medical Journal's Journal of Medical Ethics about afterbirth abortions, why should the baby live, arguing precisely what you were talking about earlier, that since fetuses basically can't produce for themselves and can't fend for themselves, they're as newborns are actually the same moral relevancy of as fetuses, and thus should be killed in every case where fetuses are. Shocking.
I didn't see that, but that's certainly
well. One of the most shocking parts of that for myself was that the Journal of Medical Ethics was forced to issue an editorial justification for publishing the article after it received quite a bit of negative press attention. And during the open letter of the authors, they basically said that this type of debate has been going on in bioethics for 40 years, so it's nothing new. Why are you getting excited about it now? But just an interesting side note, I suppose. But let's talk about your confrontation with Ezekiel Emanuel. And for those who haven't yet seen it, I would suggest they go and follow the link from the show notes for this interview to watch the confrontation itself. But for those who have seen it and want to know more about the context of that confrontation and what resulted from it, can you tell us about that?
Well, you could go to the website of my political organization, the Lyndon LaRouche's Political Action Committee, LaRouchePAC.com. There's an interview that I did on the subject of that confrontation and the background of, you know, eugenics and euthanasia. You can go to my articles on the LaRouche Pub website. That's the LaRouchePub.com. That's for the Executive Intelligence Review. This confrontation arose fairly early in Obama's term of office. I had done the research for the magazine Executive Intelligence Review, LaRouche's magazine, on the background of Callahan and Ezekiel Emanuel and the other people at Hastings Institute, and I dug as deep as I could into Ezekiel Emanuel's background. Typically, they don't really give a good biography of people like that because they're not public figures. They're in the public. They're before the public. But what is not before the public is much more of the real story. You have, in other words, what's guarded and kept away from the public is just the basic attitude of furious contempt for human life and for any decency. So I was very well armed with a background. I guess I knew as much about him as you could find out. And lo and behold, they had a meeting of a panel that was part of the structure of Obamacare at the beginning of it. And on this federal panel, Ezekiel Emanuel was one of the members. And by the rules that had been set up for this by Congress, and I guess by the general rules that govern things like public, panels like this in Washington under our Constitution, they had a public commentary availability meeting where the public could come and speak to the panel and give the public, reactions or questions. And I went there, and I got on this, I signed up to speak for 3 minutes as a historian, and I was happy to note that Ezekiel Emanuel himself was sitting there on the panel facing our audience. And so I went through, in my 3 minutes, his own background and the purposes of this this Obamacare, as it had been presented, as a revival of Hitler's euthanasia. In the 1930s, before World War II, before the mass death camps, the first thing along those lines that Hitler did was to propose that those people who were too expensive to keep alive for any economic justification for their life should be done away with. And those were Germans, not Jews, or not foreigners, not other people. These are ethnic Germans, largely. And this shocked the German people so much that it wasn't really a successful program until the war came along and they were able to put this through with the backing of the public. But there's no difference between that kind of program, which the Nazis eventually went ahead with, to kill off sick people and mentally ill people and people with various disabilities, and this program of Obama, except that more people would die under the withdrawal of medical care in a modern society than were killed by the specific euthanasia program of Germany. And we executed or put people in prison who had carried this out in Germany. So I put this record on the table at that meeting, and Ezekiel Emanuel got up and said, "This is outrageous. I'm against euthanasia, and my record is clear." And then he walked out of his own meeting. And of course, what he said was just not true. And people can check the facts as I presented them. And fortunately, that was a government meeting that was open to the public. It was filmed, and or whatever you call it, video. A video was made, and that was immediately put out onto the internet, and it's been available ever since then, so people can look and see for themselves.
I certainly hope they will do so, because it's quite a powerful confrontation. But for those out there in the audience who understand the historical pedigree of these eugenics ideas and the crypto-eugenics institutions that are continuing them, and people who are concerned about this, what can they do to really help either spread awareness of this or to stop this idea in its tracks?
I frankly think that if you try to focus on eugenics or euthanasia as a single issue, it would almost certainly fail. For example, one obvious part of the background of this controversy is the question of Christianity, because eugenics and euthanasia, as they were shaped in 19th century Britain, were a direct attack on the Christian faith. Not only that they would that people who proposed these things were anti-Christian, but they wanted to break any lingering commitment to Christian ideals within Britain itself, or even within the monarchy, so that they could have the equivalent of a fascist policy without no holds barred, like the Roman Empire at its worst. So that's the historical background of this. If you then approach a question like this on a straight religious basis, or make that a major component of your discussion, it's likely to be hijacked into, you know, a partisan thing with the neocons and all kinds of Christian fundamentalists and atheists and other people, making it really irrelevant and certainly impotent. The real issue is that civilization is in danger from a revival of fascist policies, you know, policies that are going to bring about the death of civilization in a very short time unless they're reversed. And that is the context for the driving force behind the revival of eugenics and euthanasia. This is true in two ways. First of all, we're in immediate danger of World War III. The threat to launch a war against Iran, the war that it's already going on in many covert ways, the war that's going on with guns blazing in Syria, the demand for the overthrow of these governments, is just one component of an attack, a war attack all along the borders of and interwoven with the strategic interests of Russia and China. The actual targets are Russia and China. If they are allowed to grow and become stronger by having nationalist economics and cooperation and great projects and things that the United States used to do, building dams, building nuclear plants, building and having the space program, if they're allowed to go ahead and do that, while we shut down our industry and destroy ourselves by giving all resources to insane bankers and impoverish and destroy our economy, then we will become, you know, we're thrown into the trash can, and these other countries, including even countries like India and Korea and Japan, they're on top. So the idea is to destroy those countries, and if they don't go along with being destroyed, they don't give up sovereignty, use nuclear weapons again, get into a world war with them. That's the idea in Britain. That's the idea in the upper circles of the city of London, the monarchy, and the worst crazy people in Wall Street. That is Barack Obama's present course. That has to be reversed, in my view, by removing Obama from office now while there's a Democratic administration behind him, get him out on the 25th Amendment, or impeach him now while we still have a chance. Because you could have a war with Russia within a very short time. And this is by miscalculation, but also by the design of these real crazy people. The other part of this is the destruction of the economy in the of the advanced countries of the world on purpose. In other words, the closing down of energy-intensive, capital-intensive industries in the United States, Western Europe, and like the steel mills and the nuclear plants, the failure to or the suppression of infrastructure, new infrastructure, the closing of the space program. By the original Kennedy program, we were supposed to have had people landing on Mars in the 1980s. If you close these industries, if you then and you repeal the banking regulations like Glass-Steagall and allow all the credit in the banking system to be used for speculation and for bailouts, you're guaranteeing that the next generation will die, that this generation will begin to die, and that the society will be wiped out. So that is a program for mass extinction, like happened to the dinosaurs. If we want to avoid that, and that's where eugenics and euthanasia come in as a way of conditioning how you think. That's the most important aspect of it. You're going to kill a lot more people with nuclear, H-bombs and with famine than you're going to be able to selectively kill by eugenic, very means and evil designs in medical care. But by making these cuts and getting the public to go along with them, liberals to go along with it based on, crazy loyalty to Barack Obama because he has black skin or something like that, or right-wingers going along with this because they're against government doing anything, including maintaining, Medicare or what have you. So that you say, well, we're going to kill a lot of people, but my side is justified in doing that for following ridiculous reasons. You're just going along with something that you're not even thinking about, which is the destruction of the whole civilization.
Well, it does certainly tie into a much bigger picture, and I know this is the picture that you're looking at in the Executive Intelligence Review each week. So for the benefit of listeners out there who might not have seen EIR before, can you just tell us a little bit about the publication?
It was started in the early 1970s, founded by Lyndon LaRouche. He's the American statesman and economist. He's now just about 90 years old. And so he ran for president several times. He's not going to do that again at this age. He has a youth movement. They have done a tremendous job of developing new scientific breakthroughs, which you can look at on the website, LaRouchePack.com. He and our movement are working with people in Russia, people in Europe, people in South America, people in the U.S. intelligence community, the U.S. military. I'll give you an example of how this works. About a week ago, the Russian Minister of Railroads, named Yakunin, very close to Vladimir Putin, said that he reiterated the Russian idea that we should build a tunnel across the Bering Straits to connect Asia and North America, Alaska to Russia. You know that it's only about 40 miles across there. There's a couple of little islands in between so that you could have two 20-mile tunnels, which would be each one of them shorter than the tunnel that's already built in the English Channel. And that gets you across the Pacific Ocean. If you put a rail line up to Alaska from here, which we don't have, and down from that point in far eastern Russia down to the main part of Asia and Russia, and then put on these courses really high-speed conveyances. The best would be magnetic levitation trains that can go very, very fast. They could even be put into a tube with the air exhausted. You can go at speeds like in outer space. So we're talking about revolutionizing transport. We did that in the 19th century in the United States. Why can't we do that kind of thing again? We invented airplanes. We invented public electricity. Why can't we think like that now? If we did, you're talking about massive new infrastructure development that goes towards world peace. We're going to need a powerful military for engineering and for disciplined defense and for scientific progress. But with that outlook, you're not going to have wars. Like, we didn't have wars after Lincoln for a whole generation. We had the biggest army in the world. So this is what we can do, and this is what the kind of thing that we're working on.
Well, certainly a time of world historical import, so I hope people will take a look at the Executive Intelligence Review, LaRouchePub.com. So, Anton Chaykin, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot. It was great to talk to you.